Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast. Pivot Point
on Kaya Biz.
Dr. Tom, welcome to the show and thank you so much for your time. Mr. Billy Tom joining us as our Pivot Point guest for tonight. Siyabonga, Dad.
Oh, thanks a lot, Gugu, and good evening to the Kaya FM listeners.
Thank you so much for your time. As we were discussing off-air a short moment ago, you were reminding me that the last time you were invited to Kaya Biz was at a time when my predecessor, Stevie B, Stephen Bacher, had actually invited you to the show. So I'm glad that we could, although a few years later, have you make a return back home here on Kaya Biz. So thank you so much again, sir.
You're welcome, Gugu. In fact, Kaya FM was the first radio interview I ever did.
Really?
So I was walking down memory lane as I was driving to the studio.
Dr. Tom, this one will be the best one that you've done, the most memorable one, I hope. That's what we want to leave with you. But I guess first things first, when we reflect on the role and function that you serve within the automotive space, you wear multiple hats, but very important hats, because you literally sit at the periphery of automotive trends and themes and investment that we see in South Africa. Maybe let's just start there. This bird's eye view that you have of the industry and some of the interesting changes that are taking place currently.
Gugu, it's been a very big responsibility, because if you think of it, the auto sector is 5% of the GDP. So I had to learn to be very responsible. By the way, I've finished my term. I'm now an immediate past president. I finished a few weeks ago. So when I talk, especially wearing the NAMSA hat, you talk on behalf of the industry. So what it has taught me to listen a lot, because there are very different views, and to formulate a view that represents the industry. But most importantly as well is NAMSA is such that you are leading leaders. So everybody that is in the room, whenever I've chaired meetings, led meetings, is a leader in their own right. So I had to learn to be patient, to talk last, and listen a lot. So I think after 2 years, I'm a very good listener. But also, I think the role taught me a lot to analyze the developments, understand, and also the industry is going through a major change. I mean, when we talk, like last year, we celebrated 100 years of the industry's existence, and NAMSA as an organization, it was 90 years this year. Though that industry has lasted many years, and it has happened so for a number of reasons, and I had to ensure that I draw on those reasons and ensure that I contribute positively to the industry, which I think I've done my level best to take it forward.
100%. No, you certainly have. Thank you for the correction, just in terms of understanding the role and function you serve now. But let's talk about the automotive industry. And it gets me so excited, but also as an observer and financial journalist, sometimes a bit anxious, because I take a look at what's happening in the industry and I think, my goodness, who would have thought? So we are no strangers to attracting foreign capital with international automobile manufacturers coming into the country. But over the last 3 to 4 years, there's been a heightened level of investment of Chinese auto manufacturers looking to compete in the market. And the price point and quality of their vehicles has certainly been an area of interest. I'm quite keen to understand, when we take a look at how this dynamic has shifted consumer purchases, motor preferences, and even the digital platforms on which we decide to buy our vehicles, what are your observations about the changes we're seeing in auto currently?
I think, Gugu, like any other industry, we're going through a lot of change. I mean, to me, I always refer back to other industries. Like, for instance, you take the telecommunications industry. We usually have one supplier.
Yes.
But now, if you look at it, that supplier is not even using landline. They sell more data than anything else. The auto industry is going through the same thing.
Yeah.
To give you an idea, I mean, if you think of, let's say, 1920, 1930, there was a dominance of American vehicles. If you look at the vehicles that were popular during that stage, it was different brands. Then you look at the 60s and 70s, there was more Asian brands led by the Japanese. And I think we're seeing the same thing now happening. You've mentioned the Chinese brands. Let me give you some numbers. In 2023, there were only 4 Chinese brands in South Africa.
Four
brands. In 2024, that number quadrupled. We had 16. This year, we have 25 brands, and that list is still growing, which tells you how dynamic and complex the SA auto industry is.
Yeah.
And these numbers are increasing in a market that's not growing. So that's resulting into a lot of competition because you are getting more and more models and the pie is not getting bigger.
Mm.
I think it's only going to be the first time this year that we're going to sell more vehicles than we did in 2019.
Mm.
So we've seen, and I always make a joke, and I said in my last year of presidency, I had 12 consecutive months of growth. So we've seen about 14 months of growth. I think we're going to end the year around 16%. But that growth is led mainly by passenger. And in that passenger segment, 83% of those vehicles are imported vehicles, which tells you how big the number of imported vehicles are in South Africa.
Yes.
So we're seeing a lot of changes. People are buying down. And I must say, I mean, the Chinese have changed the competitive landscape. Because if you think of it, Kuku, when you bought a car a few years ago, you will spec it and take different options. I mean, they've changed we've got to give it to them.
Mm-hmm.
They've changed the landscape. When you buy their vehicles, they come almost standard with everything.
Yep.
So it's going to take a lot. I mean, I run one of the traditional OEMs,
yes,
and it's getting more competitive, and you've got to, you know, you've got to stay calm, play to your strength. But also, I mean, what it's also doing to us, it's forcing us to relook at the entire industry, as well as the continent. I mean, we're sitting in a big continent. There is a huge opportunity in the continent, and South Africa has had an industry that can supply the continent. So I think we mustn't limit this to ourselves only in the southern part of Africa, but look at the continent as a huge opportunity for us.
Exactly. I'm so glad that you mentioned these particular themes because it's multi-layered and really does call for us to consider the various aspects, but also the consequences thereof. There's a key theme that you highlighted regarding the vehicle sales and driven by the passenger vehicle market, upwards of 54,000 units that we saw for November, so significant growth there. I do want to take it to the manufacturing part, because it's one thing to import vehicles into the economy for purchases, but one aspect of growth has really come from the automotive space and right across the value chain, the assembling of vehicles, the components part, even when it comes to the after sales market. And I'm quite keen to get your thoughts there as to the efforts that have been put in through government policies to make sure that we improve levels of employment. But where are we now in terms of the maintenance of those levels of employment and manufacturing capacity based in South Africa versus just importing already put together or fixed assembled vehicles?
So if you look at what we manufacture, for each three vehicles that we manufacture, two are exported. So for us, export plays a big role. But that export is hugely challenged. I think we've seen the change in policy in the United States of America.
Yes.
The imposition of Section 232, which has got tariffs of 25%. Those things put a lot of challenges on us because, I mean, we've exported over 20,000 vehicles to America. So we've got to look for other homes. But in South Africa, I mean, we export to 154 countries. So I think we're quite highly diversified. But Google, there's always opportunities.
Mm.
I think to us, I mean, in fact, I'm supposed to have coffee with the General Secretary of NUMSA because we need to talk to them. They're an important stakeholder.
Mm-hmm.
I think within procurement in South Africa, there is still a huge opportunity because we see instances where some of the government entities buy imported vehicles which are manufactured. For instance, in South Africa, we manufacture 5 light commercial vehicles known as buckies.
Yes.
So you've got a choice of 5. Why are you not supporting it?
Mm.
Because the manufacturing has a huge impact on employment. To give you an idea, for each buggy we produce in South Africa, it creates 4 jobs.
Whoa.
So when you buy an imported buggy, you're sacrificing 4 jobs that could have been spent to locals. And also, if you look at what the industry pays, I mean, we've just recently signed a 3-year agreement with the union a few weeks ago. The industry pays quite well, so it looks well after people. So we need to start looking at our local procurement because we build good enough vehicles that can be procured locally. That's a huge opportunity. But then there's opportunity within the continent where we can sign bilaterals. I mean, we've been engaging the Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition, mm-hmm. where we want to look at signing a bilateral with a country like Egypt. I mean, Egypt's got a good automotive industry.
Oh.
A country like Algeria. I mean, in 2011, I think 2011 to 2013, we exported vehicles to Algeria. Why do we not resuscitate that? So there's still opportunities in the continent, because if you look at the continent, I mean, the continent, you can drive, whether you go to Ghana or go to any other market, you're going to find vehicles, and these vehicles are imported. So if we could work within the continent, and also with the African Free Trade Agreement coming into effect, we need to play a leading role there, because we already have an industry that has been in existence.
Dr. Tom, you're getting me excited, because these are exactly the opportunities we should be exploring. But one of the aspects we also need to add to our competitive advantage is the production of new energy vehicles. And this has been a debate for a few years on end, if I'm not mistaken. Are we there yet to make sure that we heighten the level of production of new energy vehicles versus ICE or internal combustion engines?
Look, one of the things, I mean, I noted under the my presidency, one of the things I've experienced was to witness the release of the DTIC's EV white paper.
Yes.
At least the department is making move, but also it's not only looking at one form, which is battery. They're looking at various forms, because we're not going to move from ICE internal combustion engines to battery. There might be hybrids. There might be other forms of energy. So I think we are making a move, which is encouraging. Although I think sometimes the industry feels that it's not fast enough, because the world is not waiting for us. So we are engaging DTIC, and to me it's encouraging. I think we're having regular meetings with the DTIC minister, and we're giving input. And I'm very encouraged at the rate at which we are meeting.
To boost this level of productivity, we know we need Eskom on board. They've certainly come up. Transnet to help with our freight logistics, that's also come up, just to ensure that we're able to move and trade these goods. What's interesting is that earlier this year you had commented that we might actually have to look at the potential of a shared manufacturing or assembly plant. This is intriguing, right? Because so often brands want to have their own independence, your own plant, you have your label to it, and of course brand recognition. But how best do you believe this could actually enhance competitiveness in the automotive space?
Google, I mean, if you look at the numbers, I mean, the numbers are open to everybody to interrogate. Year to date, the second biggest vehicle sold in South Africa is imported.
The second biggest vehicle
sold in South Africa is imported. So our number two is important.
Yeah.
And I'm saying there is an opportunity if that number two could be converted and be made. And some of the OEMs, even those that are manufacturing, have got vehicles that are imported. So if you take those numbers that are imported and say, let's set up a greenfield shared facility where I bring 2,000 units, the other person brings the units, and then we will be able to manufacture those. Because the countries, some of the countries where these vehicles come from, we do not have reciprocity. So we do not send vehicles to them.
Yes.
So to me, it's a big opportunity. Because I mean, if you look at our exports, we've built strong capability. Like between 1995 and last year, we've exported over 6 million vehicles. So we've built strong competencies in this area. So I don't foresee why we are not able to set up shop where, you know, we can manufacture these vehicles locally. Because my view is, I think in certain areas we need to up our barriers to entry in some of these vehicles, because but also create a reason why people need to invest in South Africa.
Definitely.
Because if we do not create a reason or create a barrier, then people are going to find it easier to bring the vehicles. Like the numbers I've given you, if you look at the number of Chinese vehicles coming to South Africa, that tells you one thing, that we haven't created barriers.
From from four Chinese brands back in 2023 to 25 brands in 2025 and growing. That's something we need to be mindful of. Don't ever say we don't teach you anything here on Kayapers. That's why we have the experts in the industry to educate us. For every locally manufactured baki, you are supporting four jobs. That's the power of local procurement. We produce three vehicles, and every of those, or out of three vehicles manufactured, two are exported. So we have a vibrant economy. And whilst, yes, challenges remain with the US, but there are other markets and opportunities we need to look at, especially across the rest of the continent. Dr. Tom, I'm enjoying our conversation so much. We're going to try our best to extend this. So I'm hoping you've got time. We're going to pay the bills and take a quick ad break. It is 4 minutes after 7 o'clock. You are listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959 with myself, Gugule Tumfupi. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Utatu Billy Tom, joining us in his capacity tonight as CEO of Isuzu Motors, but also a key leader, having served in various roles as chair of NAMSA and past president, chair of the Automotive Transformation Investment Fund. Stay with us. We're going to learn so much more about the automotive space.
Lights, laughter, and holiday fun. It's all happening at Bilroot City. Step into a sparkling wonderland of festive displays, holiday entertainment, and non-stop excitement for everyone. Meet Santa and his elves, snap pictures, and enjoy thrilling rides while making this holiday season unforgettable. Book your stay and experience endless festive fun for the whole family. Visit goldreefcity.co.za for more details.
Goldreef City, the awesome destination. Entertain, it's what we do.
Swipe and get more this Christmas at Boxer. When you buy Albany Superior sliced white bread 700 gram, buy 3 for only 45 rand. Koo baked beans 400 gram, buy 2 for only 32 rand. Get 100 beer rewards when you spend 1,000 rand or more at Boxer.
Pivot Point
on Kaya Biz.
It is 5 minutes after 7 o'clock. You're listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959 with myself, Gugulethu Mfupi. It's the last show of the year, but boy, are we closing it off on a bang. Tonight, as you know, not only have we been reflecting on key stories that have made headlines for the year 2025, but we also continue to learn, embrace, and of course, get a deeper understanding through knowledge and insight that is shared by respective South African business leaders. Tonight, I'm in conversation with Notatu Billy Tom. He joins us in his capacity as CEO of Isuzu Motors South Africa. He's also played a very critical role within the automotive space of the country at large, having previously served in the role of chair of the Automotive Transformation Investment Fund and chair of NAMSA. We've been discussing a few facts, figures around the automotive industry at large, but perhaps we can zone it down now to Isuzu in particular. Dr. Tom, research says that for those who don't understand, he was actually been driving a truck for a long while, and there's a beautiful rendition of how you share the story on the Isuzu website, reflecting on how you would sit on your dad's lap when he was a truck driver. And I think this is so refreshing to hear that you've come and had a full circle moment now sitting at the helm of the leadership of Isuzu South Africa. And that gets me intrigued because there's an interesting connect that one has to find as a leader, as you drive and implement strategy, financial goals and objectives, and also spearhead innovation, but make sure that all the way through the ecosystem of the business, right down to the drivers of your vehicles, that they have an understanding of the passion and the strategy and the innovation you're driving whilst you prioritize their safety and their well-being in using your technology. Help us understand how that has given you this 360 view you have of automotive cars and industries and trucks, how that's actually propelled you and supported you in your role as CEO at Isuzu since 2020.
Gugu, my dad, I mean, he's turning 78 next year.
Wonderful.
Was a truck driver. So he got his license in 1966. So he used to drive trucks. So, you know, on gravel roads, we'll sit on his lap, yes, and then hold the steering wheel. And then in the Eastern Cape in the 80s, there was uprisings. So I ended up doing some grades 3 times because of the strikes. Mm-hmm. So then I thought, okay, I'm giving up. Let me go get a license. So I got my truck license earlier than I was supposed to. Mm-hmm. So I increased my age and got, hopefully someone from the authorities is not listening. So I got a truck license.
You're forgiven
so,
now.
So I mean, when I went to get my license, it was an Isuzu truck. So then when I was at varsity, I used to drive trucks to get some pocket money.
Yes.
And so that taught me quite a lot. It has contributed to my leadership style. Because here I was, I had a license, but my mom never allowed me to go and drive trucks. She says, look, I come down to Wamuza Obaleki school. So I had to do matric. I mean, I did matric at 21. And I think that helped me with maturity. But the big learning for me was, you know, when people are eating their harvest, don't eat your seeds. Because I could have quickly driven trucks, and today I will still be a truck driver. But also, it gave me insights on logistics. So when I started working, I could understand the driver's frustrations and what are the things that make them tick and how to do it. But also, I've always been passionate about the industry. I mean, even I think Isuzu has always been that brand for me, because my first three vehicles that I purchased myself were Isuzu Buggies.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always been close to the brand. So when the opportunity to lead Isuzu came, I think it was a lifetime opportunity for me, because the A is a brand that I'm passionate about, and I've been prepared, by other companies where I worked. I mean, I worked in the FMCG. FMCG, it's almost like playing 2020 cricket. There is urgency. You've got to move very fast, and you've got to make quick decisions. So that, and also understand your consumers, because the FMCG stuff is it's something that people consume. So the time I spent there working at Distell, working at SA Breweries,
yes,
helped me prepare for this role. And when I joined during COVID. So I mean, it took me 24 hours, not less than 24 hours, to sign my contract. In fact, I didn't even know what's in my contract I just signed as I was getting a job. So then I went to PE, and I had to join an industry. One, I mean, I left many years ago at GM. And then two, nobody knew me. So I had to create this video, an 8-minute video that I'll share with you, where I was talking about myself, but also getting people to talk about me.
Yes.
And to me, the biggest challenge was the industry has never had a black leader. Here is someone that's from outside having to lead this. So it was a moment where I had to sit back and say, how do I ensure that people buy into me, but also how do I make impact? And so I did a lot of things during COVID. One, I mean, a big learning from COVID, Cuckoo, was trust. Because people work from home. You couldn't see them, but you just had to trust that they will do their work. And people didn't disappoint. That's why even today, Cuckoo, I encourage my managers to still have the hybrid system, because when we had COVID, people stood in and ensure that companies continue to function despite the challenging times. We mustn't now forget about the commitments they've made now that COVID is over. And then the other thing is surround yourself with the right people.
Yes.
I'm never intimidated by stronger people than myself. In fact, I prefer to be surrounded by people that are much stronger than me, because by doing that, they are able to carry you. So those are some of the things that I've done that have taken me forward. And with Isuzu, I think we were born out of a company that disinvested in South Africa. When I talk about our story, we were one of these SOEs that went to a private school. I mean, someone had to physically contribute for us to continue.
Tell us more, because from my understanding, it's a Japanese-owned brand, right? It is listed on the exchange and has some minority shareholding from some of your international peers. But from a South African context, what actually shaped these outcomes, as you say?
We are 100% owned by Isuzu Japan.
Yes.
So there is no partner involved. We were born out of General Motors that disinvested out of Africa.
Yes.
So we were left, we became a very small business that was not doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
We had to get cash injection from our parent company. And when I joined, it was the first time that we joined a company that's not doing well financially. But to me, Isuzu is a story of what South Africans can do. We didn't get a single consultant to tell us about our business. We looked at the business ourselves,
mm-hmm,
and we looked at each other in the eye and we say, there's 1,000 people at the factory. If we as the leadership do not perform, those people at the factory, those people at the suppliers are going to lose jobs. Mm-hmm. What are the things that we had to do? It was a rough 6 months where sometimes you'll work 15 to 20 hours,
mm-hmm,
and understand the business. When you look at your income statement, you had to understand from the revenue line, mm-hmm, to the cost line,
mm-hmm,
and look at it and say, can I do with this? But we did some wonderful things that probably one day will be a case study. For instance, in 2020, the Isuzu management didn't take salary increases. They said the company is not doing well. We're not going to take increases. The executives withheld their bonuses because during COVID, I mean, for 5 weeks, the company didn't generate money.
Yes.
So there's a lot of good things that the leadership of the company did. We changed the structures. We changed our way of doing business. But most importantly, we worked very well with the dealer network, because the dealer network is your route to market. market in the auto sector. And all those things, I mean, with a stronger dealer network, committed employees, the results started coming. And one thing, Gugu, when people deliver, make it a point, you honor what you promised them.
Yes.
And I mean, we are now in a position where we are able to even invest. I mean, a month ago, we announced a $750 million investment between us and a black industrialist, black African female industrialist. And in a few months' time, we'll be making another investment. But those things, for you to do them, you've got to buy equity with your owners.
Yes.
And you only buy equity with your own owners. There's one way you can do it, is to deliver consistent results. And
yes,
we've been able to do it in the last few years, but still remain grounded.
I think this is so important because that has really been a transition that you've had to experience through your work and industry observations. And I do recall GM let go of the likes of Opel and a few other brands as well that divested from the South African environment. What I find so refreshing, of course, is not only this insight that you've shared with us, but one thing that echoes and is highlighted is your leadership. And speaking of your leadership, this is also one of my favorite parts of these kind of conversations and interactions, because we have the opportunity to interact with our listeners, but also people who have experienced your leadership. And typically I ask for voice notes to be shared through on 063-688-0959. So if you do have any voice notes that you'd like to share with Utatu Pilitom, please do so. Currently serving as the CEO of Isuzu Motors, but has played a critical role as in his roles and capacity in the past as chair of NAMSA and chair of the Automotive Transformation Investment Fund. Tatu Tom, I'm going to ask you to put on your headphones. We're just going to make sure that this is audible for you, because on the line, we've got someone whom I've typically interviewed to talk about trade relations, the economic numbers coming out of NAMSA, what they tell us about the automotive space. So I guess you have a good feeling and understanding of who I'm going to introduce, who's on the telephone line. But this is someone that you've worked with. And maybe let's start off by welcoming her and recognizing if you can tell her voice or not. But good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Gugu, and good evening to Ntate Tom that's with you in studio.
His eyebrows and eyes just lit up. But for those who don't know, this is Dr. Paulina Mamukhoba. She is economist at NAMSA, whom we've spoken to many times on the show here before. Such a pleasure to have you calling in as NAMSA's chief economist. But I know that you're calling in for a different type of conversation tonight. Is there anything you'd like to say to Dr. Tom, Dr. Paulina?
Yes, thank you so much, Gugu. You know, first of all, I think it's very important just to commend Ntate Tom and his leadership. I mean, also having just joined the industry about over a year ago, being able to join under his leadership has been tremendously supportive. Sometimes we undermine this critical aspect of leadership. The confidence that he built in his team is what has continued to enable us to actually do work that continues to spur the industry forward. So I think definitely commendable. And of course, he's navigated one of the most trying times, just beyond the COVID times, etc. This geopolitical shift, to be able to keep an industry stable and still confident amidst of these trying times, for us has been something that we've also seen him help us navigate with quite ease and, of course, some confidence to say we will recover. And like he mentioned, that since 2019, we've experienced skyrocketing new vehicle sales. Of course, there are dynamics which he's mentioned in terms of import versus manufactured vehicles. But for us to be able to meet some of those targets, it's, of course, because of some of the leadership traits that we have seen that he continued to spur on. But what I wanted to weigh in on is the question that you brought up, Gugu, around shared manufacturing as an opportunity. One of the strategic assets that I feel remains under-leveraged, especially in the South African context, is our special economic zones, which I believe that if we are to use that critical and strategic asset to drive this shared manufacturing as an opportunity, as that Tom mentioned, targeting this import substitution to say, how do we leverage the one-stop shop from an investment attraction perspective within special economic zones to target these companies and say we've got facilities that have been created strategically to attract investment, but to support investment as well for continued growth. I think that's one of the things that we need to, as an industry, even going forward, to continue to pursue, because the erosion of manufacturing, especially in this industry, will become quite dire. Ntate Tom mentioned our contribution of 5% to the economy, but think about it in terms of industrialization and manufacturing value add. Without the automotive industry, we do not have any other industry that contributes that significance in terms of manufacturing value add. So I think for shared manufacturing, we need to bring in government and continue to say, how do we leverage our strategic assets like special economic zones to actually drive and enhance that continued manufacturing capability in South Africa?
Oh, lovely. Oh, see why I love listening to the both of you talk? Because I keep learning. Your response, Dr. Tom?
I can't say it better than the doc. Doc, well said, and thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. Dr. Paulina, thank you so much. We will definitely touch base with you in the first quarter of next year. And most importantly, thank you as well for sharing your reflections and experience of working with Dr. Tom. We wish you a great festive season, Dr. Paulina.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, and take care.
Thank you, Dr. Paulina Mamukhobo. She is a chief economist at NAMSA, joining us, and as you heard, echoing much of the sentiments that have been shared by Dr. Tom. And Dr. Tom, maybe if I can, before we go to a voice note that's also been shared, leadership is obviously so clear, and given the response that you have from Dr. Paulina and how she's also added her perspective, you've touched on a few points that really do speak and underscore what leadership is to you, but how do you impart leadership lessons to those that are younger than you, as you have done with the likes of Dr. Paulina?
I think there's so many people that have taught me things about leadership. You know, when I talk to people, I always refer them back to what Napoleon used to say. He said, a leader is a dealer in hope.
Yes.
And you also become the weatherman.
Uh-huh.
If you are not in a good mood, even the guys sweeping the floors know that the leader is in a bad mood. So you've always have to watch yourself, your body language, how do you arrive at work, your behaviors, because people, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, they learn from you. Like, for instance, where I work, I don't allow people to greet me, including the cleaning people.
Really?
I greet them.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Because that's very important. Like, for instance, the lady that's cleaning, there is a child at home she is busy taking to school. I need to be a good example for her of an educated child. She says, sure, one day when my child finishes, it will be nice to be like him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, that's what leadership is about. To the young people, I think sometimes as we get older, we don't realize that we're getting older, and a lot of times we think we are right.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, you always have to listen to the young people because they've got energy. There's less politics. They want to do something, mm-hmm. and you've got to create that space for them, create that confidence, and let them make mistakes. Because a lot of times, you know, we've done this, got the T-shirt, and we want to get on with life. We just want to tell people because we've seen it all.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you've got to listen to the younger people. Like, for instance, at Isuzu,
mm-hmm.
our strategy process, we've set up a think tank, and guess who is in that think tank? It's all the young leaders,
uh-huh.
because they are ambitious. Because, like, for instance, I might be left with 10 years, so my ambition is only taking me to 10 years. But when I talk to younger people, their ambition is a 30-year program.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got it in longer than us. So we've got to create that space for them to take over, so that and most importantly, for them to be heard.
100%. I'm glad that you mentioned that because it's so critical for us to actually understand the partnerships and levels of sponsorship and mentorship that can take place between younger generations and those, or intergenerationally is the word that I'm looking for.
Mm.
Dr. Tom, we've got another voice note that's come through from a good friend, Nqaba Mapete. Let's listen to this one.
Great chat, guys. Really enjoying this. Dr. Tom, please respond to this. Why are we as a country, if not continent, producing a vehicle that can be mainstreamed? We've got the transport network and routes in the continent. We surely have the skills and the labor. Perhaps we might not have the necessary government priorities and the necessary investments that are put there. But localize this question, for instance, in a South Africa context. We have had Danel. We have created something like the Royal Falcon. In other words, it speaks to our capacity. Has there been no skills transfer in having plants like Mercedes-Benz, BMW, now Ford in Pretoria, GM recently, and VW in the Eastern Cape, and the influx of China? Can we not somehow put together the necessary pieces that can create an outlet that manufactures a vehicle that can then be mainstreamed as an entry-level vehicle, if it is to be, or a luxury vehicle, whatever, but a brand that comes from Africa that can be taken to the world? Surely we deserve even that.
Beautiful question. Your response, Dr. Tom?
Okay, thanks, Ngaba. You're giving me a difficult question before I go on holiday. I think, Gugu, if you look at around the world, you battle to find strong, probably regional products, because I think you need deep pockets to create a strong brand.
Mm-hmm.
But my response...
But does that mean we can't allocate the capital? I think South Africa, the money's there.
I'll tell you where we can get scale and have better influence. I'll give you an example.
Sure.
Let me give you the industry numbers. Last year we made 95, I think about, let's say 95 million cars. A third of those were made in China, about 30 million. The second biggest was America with 10 million. The third biggest was Japan with 8 million. The fourth biggest was India. I think it's about 6 million.
Mm-hmm.
And my view is India might pass Japan in the next 3 years and become number three.
Mm-hmm.
And how has India done that? If you look at the cars, India has set themselves up as a manufacturing base.
Yes.
Instead of their own. If you look at the cars coming out of India, for instance, Suzuki comes out of India, the small Toyota vehicles out of India, Stellantis has got cars. So if you look at them, how they've set themselves up as a manufacturing hub, creating a lot of jobs. And my view is, if we were to do the same thing, we've already done it in South Africa. Because if you look at South Africa, I mean, we are an industry of 500,000 people and we don't have our own vehicle because we are a manufacturing base. And to me, I would rather say, let's create a vehicle amongst those we make that withstand African conditions, made in South Africa. With what we already have. Like, for instance, with Isuzu, I mean, my Isuzus work in 30 countries. Because they've been tested in the continent. I don't think we've got the competitive edge to make our own vehicle to compete strongly in Africa. It's the numbers are fairly small, and you're going to need deeper pockets to do that. To me, I'd rather turn it around and say, like South Africa has done, I mean, I want to see a future where more of the Chinese manufacturers set shop in South Africa for the continent that can create jobs in the country and parts of the continent.
Got you. We've got the infrastructure. We've got the capacity. So instead of importing those vehicles here, let's actually then just rather manufacture them here together with the global brands that we currently have and use that as a gateway to export across the continent.
Mm. And also, Google, with geopolitics, you're going to battle with some of the things. And also, I mean, even for us as an auto sector, I don't foresee bigger contracts coming our way going forward. If you think of the geopolitics taking place, Africa, it's a huge opportunity for us, and we need to be more visible, more dominant, more participative in the continent. Because, I mean, take COVID, Gugu. Remember, there was a stage where the entire continent didn't have a single COVID shot.
Yes.
They were allocated elsewhere.
Yes.
And to me, that was a big lesson to say, let's start focusing on the continent because the geopolitics are not going to disappear quickly.
100%. And I hear you on the technicalities that might be involved in also playing to our strengths. Perhaps to build up on Ngaba's comment, but also reflecting on the recent vehicle sales figures published by NAMSA. We love buggies in South Africa. You even commented on the fact that we actually have a larger generation in population or numbers that are manufactured in terms of buggies. Do we know why? And I ask this because Isuzu, your brand has actually grown in terms of popularity within the buggy category. In a moment, we'll talk about trucking.
I think if you look at the role buggies played, I mean, the infrastructure in the continent is not great.
Yeah.
So buggies play a particular role. But if you look at how the segment has also been improved, I mean, the buggies now play a dual role. It can be your family vehicle, but also it can be a work vehicle. And to me, that's where the opportunity lies in the continent, because they would stand the harsh conditions in the continent versus your passenger cars.
I say this because we have a WhatsApp message that also has come through from Marco. Marco comments here, impressive. I'm a Ford Ranger construction grootman, but I must admit, the new Isuzu D-Max V-Cross is on top of my shopping list this Christmas. Well done to Isuzu. So
just also remind him, Gugu.
Yes, sir.
you know, you travel around the country and you see vehicles being loaded on tow trucks. You never see an Isuzu on a tow truck.
I like that one. You're quite right. We certainly don't see them on a tow truck. I see where you're going with that one. Something else that I think has built up on, you know, just vehicle preferences and questions just out of interest is also the shift in telematics. What Isuzu does also provide is not just buggies, but you also have ride through light to heavy commercial vehicles. And that's essentially the front part of the truck. And whether it's a tipper truck or a different type of end that is actually attached to it, you play a critical role in the maintenance of logistics, telematics across the industry. And I think this is important because, given your experience in the financial services space, in logistics, in FMCG, you understand how a truck sits at the center of all these spheres of economic growth and economic sectors. But any shifts and new innovations that we see there that are very specific to driving efficiency but also improving profitability for businesses?
Look, I mean, Gugu Isuzu is a truck company that sells buggies. So trucking is at the core of our business. Chances are this morning the bread you bought was delivered on an Isuzu truck.
Yeah.
I mean, we sell to a lot of the bakeries.
Yeah.
Some of the shifts we're seeing is one is driver economics. If you look at today's trucks, a lot of them are automatic because of the you know the road congestions, but also for ease of driving. There is a huge focus on safety, safety for the driver, safety for the pedestrians. So there is a lot that has been done. In other countries, I think in South Africa, I mean, we haven't even raised our hand. There is a drive towards automation because in countries like Japan, they are working towards automation because there is no drivers available.
Literally trucks that drive themselves.
Themselves.
Between the N3, the N1, the port, the N12, everything.
From here to Durban. But on its own.
Could we ever get there in South Africa? Well, I understand the socioeconomic dynamics are different.
I think for us in South Africa, with unemployment that we have, it's something we haven't touched, but never say never. Because you might find that you might need the automated driver trucks on long distance because of driver fatigue, but short distance where you need to maneuver and find double parking, that the truck might drive the whole day.
Yeah.
So you might need people. So maybe at some point, but probably not in the next maybe 15, 20 years.
Sure.
But I think with focus on safety, we might use them elsewhere. And I think also on new energies, I mean, on the trucks, they are now, like for instance, ourselves as Isuzu, we've got trucks running on compressed natural gas because CNG is used by the bakeries. So the bakeries prefer CNG trucks. I mean, in fact, one of the bigger bakeries has got 15 of those units.
Help us understand the difference between that and, I guess, the battery vehicles. It's a different form of energy.
Yes, it's still. I mean, the bakeries use compressed natural gas in their baking process.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of using diesel, they also use CNG on their trucks. So it's less harsh on the environment.
Uh-huh.
So it's part of our drive towards carbon neutrality. So there is less carbon emissions. The performance is the same. So we've made those available.
Yeah.
There is also dual fuel vehicles where you can use diesel and also CNG as well. And then we do have, I mean, like last year, I drove our first fully battery-operated vehicles, particularly those working in CBD and short distance.
You're still driving.
I still that passion is still there, Gugu. It's still there. Every time I see a truck, I look around and I want to get into the driver's seat.
Oh, lovely. Dr. Tom, I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation tonight. I want to appreciate you for being so open with the economic data, for educating us on key themes that many of us may not even have considered, and a gentle reminder of how far-reaching your work as a company, Isuzu, but also as an industry in the automotive space that you play within South Africa's economic realm, and how you touch our lives, whether it's delivering bread, gas, coal to mines, or even in the levels of individuals that you employ, and far more so the impact that you have on the economy. Thank you kindly for your time today, and I guess plans for the next 5 years? You've been at Isuzu for a while now, still going to stick to the automotive space?
Yeah, I'm here for some time. When you're at my age, you also don't have many options. But to me, Gugu, I'm excited about the continent.
Mm.
I call myself an Afro-optimist. There is a huge potential in this continent. I mean, earlier this year, I was in Tanzania and Kenya.
Yes.
And not so long ago, I was in Ivory Coast and Ghana. Whenever you travel around the continent, opportunities just hit you. There is huge opportunity in the continent, and I'm looking forward to the next 5 years because this is the place to be. Like, for instance, in the Baki space, the continent is now number two for ISUS. We used to be number four.
Oh,
there is a huge growth in this continent, so I want to be part of that growth journey.
100%. Thank you so much for your time again, sir. We wish you all the best and truly appreciate your time. That was our guest joining us this evening, Utatupili Tom. He is serving as the CEO of Isuzu Motors South Africa, but as you can tell, with a rich level of experience and depth, given his previous capacity and where he served as chair of NAMSA as well as chair of the Automotive Transformation Investment Fund. Dr. Tom, before we let you go, there's one more voice note that we're signing out with. This one is from one of our regular listeners and a member of the KayaBiz team, Mobulawa. This is just a comment that she'd like to share with you.
You know, Sis Gooks, Abantabafana Nabontate Tom are the kind of leaders that we need. And if we had such leaders in South Africa, it will be such a better place. How deep is that? How deep is that saying? Leaders are dealers in hope. Hey? Oh, that is so profound. That is so, so profound. Thank you to Ntate Tom. Thank you, Gooks, for this show. Last one for the year. Thank you.
Stay Kaya.
At Kaya on 959.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.